Mother Nature, Mother Nature, she's gonna get you. Yeah, she's gonna get you. Mother Nature, she's gonna hate you. And she's gonna get you. Gonna get you, you betcha.
Welcome to Nature Bets Last on the Progressive Radio Network. It's NBL on PRN.fm. This May 7th, 29 edition, episode 126 of Nature Bets Last comes to you live from Rakeno Island in Aotearoa, New Zealand, and also from Westchester County, New York in the United States. This is Kevin Hester, and I'm again joined today by my co-host, Professor Guy McPherson. Today's show includes a conversation with two individuals who hosted Guy on his latest speaking tour. Guy, will you do the honors, please?
Thank you, Kevin, and with apologies in advance for the long introductions I'm about to give, these are two amazing people we have on the air with us today. I'm just back from a speaking tour of nearly 5 weeks. It began in Alaska in early April and wrapped up 3 days ago when I flew back to New York from Portland, Oregon. The tour was off to a great start in Fairbanks, Alaska, where Cache Garrett served as host and organizer for the initial part of the speaking tour. My partner, Pauline, who is also a professional videographer, has already edited and posted video from the two presentations in Fairbanks. Cache is a graduate student in the University of Alaska Fairbanks. She's also a licensed massage therapist who moved to Juneau from Fairbanks to move from Juneau to Fairbanks to pursue a graduate degree. She reached out to me in September of 2018. About 6 months later, she was hosting us at her home in Fairbanks and organizing presentations on campus. The consummate hostess, she supplied airline tickets and venues for our trip to the final frontier. Cache Garrett was born and raised in Alaska. She's a world traveler, hot spring enthusiast, and concerned citizen of Earth. Cache is studying professional communication and leadership as a graduate student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, specifically for these transitional times. And speaking of time, if time allows, she will be governor of Alaska. I have no doubt about that. We traveled from Fairbanks to Juneau, where we were greeted by Colin Peacock. Colin is a former student and also a former teacher of mine from our days in Tucson, Arizona. He becomes half of the only father and son team to be interviewed on this show. We interviewed Colin's dad, Doug Peacock, on February 16th, 2016. I'm honored to call both Colin and Doug my friends. Colin spent most of his youth camping and exploring the American West, and while mostly nomadic, he often called Tucson, Arizona his home. He eventually would settle in San Francisco, California, where he graduated from the California Culinary Academy in 2003 with an associate chef's degree. After 5 years of promoting the use of local and sustainable food, he was ready to get back to the wild. He went on to lead conservation biology field programs in places such as Namibia, the Yukon, and the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem. During this time, he moved east to Massachusetts and received a bachelor's degree in conservation biology from Clark University in 2011. After graduating, he changed course once again to pursue the life of a photographer. Colin used his marketing and photojournalism skills to help sustainable development projects, local food organizations, and nonprofits achieve greater results through media and marketing, culminating in 2016, where he launched a sustainable development company of his own in the rural high plains of Peru, Pachacuti Foods. Through all of his travels, Colin has always heard the call of glaciers and salmon. It was with great joy that he found his way back to the lush rainforests and rich coastal areas of the Alaskan Southeast. To him, there is nothing finer than doing good work that benefits local people, places, and food. It is an especially large honor to do so in such a wild, intact, and incredible community and a location, that of Southeast Alaska. We will be taking your toll-free calls today. Please call us with your questions and comments after we spend a bit of time with our guests. Welcome to Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network, Cache Garrett and Colin Peacock.
Thank you so much, Guy. Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure. Absolute pleasure to have you both on online. Sorry if there's a delay between us speaking.
Okay, got it.
Cool. So one thing I would like to ask at the beginning is, how is Guy's message being received on this particular tour? As you might know, I've done two tours with Guy in 2014 and 2016, and the people that were coming to see us over the two different times were much more aware about the severity of the crises we face. How did you find it with your audiences?
Yeah, I think with glaciers in your backyard, it's just no surprise that people here are very aware of global warming, especially in Southeast, where a lot of people know people that commercially fish, and commercial fishing seasons have moved up and up and up, and there's so much weirdness with salmon returns and other fisheries. Yeah, it's really an obvious thing here, unlike how it is in many places in the U.S. Yeah.
And we were fortunate when we were visiting... Sorry, Cache. I just wanted to weigh in. We were fortunate enough to see the Mendenhall Glacier in Juneau with Colin, and the Mendenhall Glacier has receded profoundly in a very short period of time. We saw an observation deck that you nearly had to have binoculars to see the glacier from the observation deck. That's how fast it's been moving. Go ahead, Cache. I'm sorry.
Yes, you are right, Guy. And in the 20 years that I have called Juneau home, of course, I'm in Fairbanks now, but I have seen massive changes in that glacier in just my 20 years there. And I would say in that way, it's in our faces here, even though a lot of people don't want to believe the dire trouble that we're headed to. And they do believe that there's something that we can do. People are very much aware of it. And I would say that the younger generations, it's very real for the younger, like the millennials, I would say. Though a lot of our older population are really starting to just tell the truth about what they've seen all these years.
Each of you has focused on human health from a much larger perspective than is customary. You're not considered part of the human health industry, although you work to keep people fit. So I have two questions for each of you. One, how did you come to do the work you do? And two, how do you manage to remain optimistic in light of a populace that is clearly not interested in keeping fit? Cache, if you could go first.
Sure. Well, I have worked in the field of health promotion for quite some years. I got my start, I would say, at the young age of 17. I moved from Palmer, Alaska, my hometown, to Juneau in the Southeast. And I took a job at a gym. And part of the perks of that job is that employees would get discounted massage. So when they told me that, I said, "What's massage?" I didn't even know. And then they explained what it was, and I said, "Oh yeah, I'll try that." So I made my appointment for my first massage because I was getting a discount and I thought I would take advantage of the perk. And it turns out that within the first 10 seconds of that massage, I had a visceral experience that this was my calling. It was incredible. There aren't words to explain because it's so surreal when you encounter a moment that your eyes are opened to what you will be doing for the rest of your life. And that was my experience. Just the first 10 seconds of that massage, I had a hit that this was my career. And it took me several years to finally get to massage school because, of course, I wanted to get my undergraduate degree first. And my advice to anyone considering the two options, I would say, do your trade first and use your trade to put yourself through college.
Well, yeah, I don't know if I have anything that clear. I think for me, I always wanted to do some kind of work that was meaningful to me, and that's changed shape so many times, but often it's centered around food. Ever since ever since I was a teenager, I think I've been working in food in some aspect, and often in photography. One of the first gigs I had as a photographer was to help a friend carry camera gear into Mexico and take photos of missions. But my side photo project was to document all the taquerias we ate at and find the best tacos. And so I was very food focused, and that really sort of influenced my work because I love foraging and fishing and hunting, and getting out and farming and gardening too. So I just like to hang out with that. And so I did that as a chef, but I wanted to be ethical. So I wanted to promote sustainability within that. And then I, you know, tried conservation biology and a bunch of other things and sustainable development and being an entrepreneur. And I can't say any one thing led me to where I'm at now. Really, I don't think I could have gotten this job that I'm currently doing and be as effective at it as I hadn't sort of wandered all over the map and just followed my passions. So maybe if anything, that's how I got to where I am today, is that I had a father who really only told me in terms of career advice to follow your passions, and to, you know, respect no one and sort of just listen to yourself. So yeah, I just kind of did that. And I think I did end up doing something I truly love to do.
Well, that's awesome. And I'll be expecting a list of the taqueria places after the show is done here.
Yeah.
Second question, Colin, why don't you go first this time? How do you manage to remain optimistic, or do you, in light of a populace that is clearly not interested in remaining fit? How do you get up every day and go to work? How did you find your passion, and how do you keep your passion in light of an unbelievably unwilling populace, we'll say?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, and one that, you know, when I first met you and sort of studied with you back in University of Arizona, I wasn't optimistic. It was depressive to think about this and overwhelming at times, and that happens periodically for me. And I think for me, I find solace and wisdom in solitude and wilderness. So for me, I usually retreat within myself, and I spend a lot of time in wild places, and that's an incredible luxury I have available to me, but it's also, you know, what I need really to survive and remain optimistic. So when I do that, and I did that recently when you visited, I was definitely thinking deeply about, you know, what the work I do, you know, is good work that I enjoy and feel called to do, but, you know, it's not necessarily going to change anything. So I don't know. I use that time to reexamine, like, the meaning that gives me and the purpose that gives me in life. And, you know, if we're all going to die anyway, wouldn't you rather be doing something that you yourself ascribe a lot of meaning to and think is worthwhile? So I do that. And I also have a profound spiritual practice that also helps me quite a bit. I'm a Taoist, and I teach Qigong and Tai Chi. And as a Taoist, you know, we don't necessarily believe that when you die, you just die. There's a lot of things that happen after that. So when you practice a spiritual practice like that, it's kind of like you're working on things beyond this current lifetime. And you also help others with that, which is really, really helpful to me. I am never as good when I'm just trying to help myself. When I try to help others, that really brings me out of myself. Yeah.
Yeah. How about you, Cache? Can you weigh in on how you remain optimistic if you do?
Yeah. Thank you for the question. I tend to more or less remain in neutrality and equanimity due to my Vipassana practice. So like Colin, I'm a spiritual person, and meditation is very important. I draw from the Buddhist path, as well as from the Christian path and from the New Age path. I kind of mix them all into a conglomerate that works for me, and yoga practice. But to stay optimistic, I think it's a nice way to be, but it's not always practical or reasonable or in my best interest to have an attachment to an outcome. So one thing that I like to do is just hope for the best for people and keep them in prayers, but not be attached to their specific decisions. If I can be a witness to them and a positive inspiration, I always aspire to do that. And my friends tell me that I'm a very inspirational person, so I must be doing something right. But the times of my life that I've let myself be impacted and affected by other people's decisions has done me no good. And I understand that we're all on individual paths. And that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, thanks for those thoughtful responses. And speaking of thoughtful, you're both in your 30s, as I recall. And it appears that you have been deprived of, for example, the long life I will have. I come across two general responses to my message from people approximately your age. One is anger and bitterness, and understandably so, at my generation and the generation before mine that had all the warning signs in front of us and did nothing positive in terms of destroying the living planet. And the other response is one of liberation, as if my message has set people free, even young people who, through intuition or observation, have come to realize that we can't maintain the infinite growth paradigm indefinitely, and they're on the short end of the stick. So, can you comment on my rambling there, maybe make some sense of it from your own perspective? Keshe, why don't we start with you? What's it like to be in your 30s, knowing that time is almost certainly shorter for you than it is for your parents and your grandparents, for example? Does that make you angry? Does that make you liberated? How are you feeling, and how are you living with this information?
Well, it's definitely a journey. So some days I sit and I think about what's coming, and it freaks me out. Other days, I take it with the equanimity that I was speaking of earlier. It is what it is, and there's no changing it. And so to deny the reality that we're facing is useless. It's a waste of my time. And I spend my time doing things that I enjoy. In particular, I have three beautiful animals. Guy, you met them when you were here. My beautiful rescue dog that I saved her from a life of being stray on a beach in Molokai. And soon after, I rescued two street kittens from a neighborhood in Georgia. And they bring complete, utter joy and delight minute by minute on a daily basis. And I'm in graduate school, which is something that I've wanted to do for many, many years. So I'm living my dreams and I'm following the passion, as Colin took his father, Doug's advice. You know, you've got to follow your passion, follow your heart as much as you can. And the outcomes will be what they will be. Sometimes I wonder if things are just destined, right? Like if I was born into an existence that everything was already written, or am I really creating as I go? I think it might even be a blend of the two. But, you know, it's challenging at times. Sometimes I have a few friends and I call them on occasion and say, I'm having a hard time, you know, with just thinking about what we're facing. And a lot of my friends don't think like me. They don't want to believe that it's the end, though they're willing to admit that, or that we're near to the end, I should say. Though they're willing to admit that we are in dire straits. There's this timeline, though, of 2100, and people really like to think that we've got time to make changes that will save us on the planet prior to 2100. But here I am, the oldest I've ever been, 37 years old, and I'm content to have decided not to reproduce, not to be attached to an idea of having a life partner, a marriage, children. Earlier, I wanted 6 kids, and it just never happened for me because I've done the other things of my heart's desires, right? I've traveled the world, and I've worked all over, and I've volunteered all over, and I got my undergraduate degree, and I did my trade, and I've been creating a wonderful career all these years. But now, and it really changed for me in 2016 when I took myself to Spain to walk the Camino de Santiago, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners will have heard of, a spiritual pilgrimage, Catholic in nature these days and for the recent history. But prior to that, it was a pagan pilgrimage to the end of the world, to the end of the land. And that is a life-changing experience. I recommend it to anyone who has deep thoughts and doesn't know how to navigate through them, or they want to make a change in their life. The Camino is life-changing. And when I emerged at the end of that 40-day walk, I determined that I did no longer need to live my life with one goal, that I wanted to be married and have children. That in itself feels very liberating. And I think I do receive the news these days with more liberation. So I don't hesitate to do what I want to do. For instance, I just booked a ticket to visit New Zealand again because I love this country and everyone should go to New Zealand if they can. And time is short and I have mileage saved up and I want to use it. So I'm going to New Zealand for my holiday break. And it might mean that I miss finals week, but you know what? It's more important to me in the time that we have to go see New Zealand and see my friends there and go hiking and hot springing than it is to be at finals week, frankly. So I don't know. Looking forward to having some callers call in and comment on some of these things. Thank you, Guy.
And you have to look forward to seeing your new friend, Kevin Hester, there in New Zealand as well.
Yes, I can't wait.
You can come and see my antidote to despair, which is volunteering at a not-for-profit native tree nursery on the island. My last act of rebellion is to be planting native trees, even in full knowledge of the fact that they're not going to get through the bottleneck that we're all facing. I think it's important for everyone to be doing whatever they can in terms of what their heart desires in these times. I think it's an important way for us all to manage our grief.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Colin, do you want to weigh in on behalf of your generation, or at least on behalf of yourself?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I completely agree with both Kevin. I relate a lot to what Cachet has said and her reasonings for how she is taking the news and what she chooses to do with her life. You know, for me, yeah, let's see. I mean, yeah, I've already kind of talked about it. You know, I think for me, I don't have a reaction to having a lifetime that is shorter than my grandparents that is, you know, anger or bitterness, but it's more just, yeah, sadness that, you know, things didn't get realized in this lifetime in the way that I wanted them to. But I also don't have a lot of attachment to outcome and things turning out specifically. You know, I have some, but it's kind of a practice for me to not be attached and to also be very conscious of death and its role and importance in human life and spirituality and just, you know, giving meaning to things. And yeah, once again, growing up with Doug Peacock as your father, you know, having him basically always be ready to die on some trip or, you know, just live his life fully is a great inspiration and thing that has taught me a lot about sort of living your life. I don't know, just living it with full meaning and choosing to do things that really matter to you. And so that is what I do. And that is how, you know, I have handled my life, and I haven't spent a lot of time just kind of worrying that my life is shorter than my grandparents or, you know, that I don't know, we're not going to get to do what we thought we were going to do. I think that is also kind of a false assumption. You know, we never know what the future is going to hold. And I enjoy that open space of the future where it is unpredictable. And yes, maybe my life is short, but I'm still going to be, I don't know, as you say, planting native trees, doing your last act of defiance, fighting for local food, you know, whatever it is that gives me the most passion and joy. And yeah, to speak more about what does that here, I mean, you know, my friendships, my community, getting out foraging seasonally, fishing, hiking, you know, these things just, they light me up and they give me so much joy. And I still have that, even if the world is ending, even it might even be a little brighter. Although, as I said, in my case, I'm not sure that matters that much. Yeah.
That's great. Thanks. You know, you both
can
talk
I
about.
Add to,
go
can
ahead.
I just add to what Colin was saying? We encounter a lot of people who don't necessarily agree that time is short, but a lot of people concur that something is just not right. And I myself study Tantra as well, and part of the tantric lifestyle is to live a fully embodied and impassioned life where you are honoring the desires of your heart and your authentic being and being a person of integrity. And in that, I like to advocate for people in these times, these transitional times, to really put themselves to treat themselves better and to model to everyone how they want to be treated by having strong boundaries and not tolerating abuse and mistreatment by simple statements like, it is not okay. The way you're talking to me is not okay, or et cetera, et cetera. So I just wanted to put that out there because time is short and there is no reason to not have harmonious relationships at this time on the planet more than any other time. And hopefully that will let people really advocate for themselves and assert for their needs and live a more empowered life.
You both brought up spirituality. Well, let me remind our listeners again that we're open for your toll-free calls at 888-874-4888. So if you'd like to ask a question of one of these two amazing people, here's your chance, 888-874-4888. You both talk about spirituality, which I find absolutely fascinating because as a scientist, well, growing up, of course, there was exactly one way to live, and that was the pursuit of Christianity. That's what the whole culture was pushing on almost everybody. And you both mention spiritual practices that go well beyond Christianity. Colin mentioned Taoism, Cache mentioned Tantra and paganism. And that's very different than my experience. I'm wondering if, again, I'm asking you to represent an entire generation here. Are these what would be considered unusual when I was a youngster and even into my 30s? Are they commonplace in your generation? How did you come to pursue these spiritual practices? And, you know, most people wouldn't consider me to be spiritual at all until they actually listen to my message. So, Colin, why don't you start us off with that one?
Sure. Yeah, well, I think these are unusual practices for our generation, too. Less unusual, perhaps, but I don't know anyone my age who's also a practicing Taoist, so I know a few Buddhists and sort of tantric people and yogis and things like that. So still very, very unusual. And for me, it's just a natural extension of my own sort of relationship with wilderness and how important that is to me. Getting out in wilderness and sort of having the value of that as a meditative space, as a space to make you healthier, feel better, feel more connected, to give you wisdom and energy. That's 100% in line with Taoism. So a lot of the beliefs I already had, you know, really just slotted into this system that's already established. And the more I practiced with Taoist practitioners and people and got to them, I was like, oh yeah, this just already all makes sense to me. So for me, it was pretty easy, but it's been a lifelong pursuit. You know, I just calculated it yesterday, actually. It's funny. It's been, I think, 20 something years, maybe 22 years of me practicing Taoist practices, on and off. And yeah, I don't know. It's certainly central to my life and how I live, but I don't know if I find it as anything beyond like my own personal path. Like, I love it so much, but it's not something I talk about either. You know, I don't know if many people know I'm a very spiritual person, although they might know I teach classes or something. But yeah, it's not like Christianity. There's no way that you go out there and say, yeah, you should worship this. This is the only way. Taoism is very independent, at least the sect or kind of lineage that I follow, and very much about developing your own sort of personal spiritual path in this world and others. Yeah.
Cache, you care to weigh in?
Go on. Hey, Cache.
Yeah. Yes. So life is sacred and all life is sacred on this planet. And it's really amazing that we're here, even though there's so many of us and so many animals and all kinds of life forms. But the chances of me being born are so, tiny, right? And so I feel really blessed that I had an opportunity to come to this planet and experience this life, despite the hard times. You know, life is a very trying thing. There's a lot of struggles along the way. But my spirituality, I honestly think that I was, that I'm a spirit in a human body. I'm a spirit from somewhere that's here having a human incarnation on planet Earth. And I think we come in as that and then forget and have a whole lifetime to try to remember. And I discovered, so I was born into the Christian church, and it was what it was when I was a child. It was what I knew. And then something happened when I was 12 years old, and my mother, who's just so cool, decided to take me to every single church in my hometown. There were over 50. So for the entire year that I was 12, we went to a different church every Sunday. She wanted me to experience what was out there. And I have always been a seeker, even from the time, you know, I'd say probably from 10 years old, I probably knew that I was a spiritual seeker and wanted a connection with a higher source. And one of those churches really stood out to me. It was Antiochian Orthodox. And I ended up returning there when I was 16 to pursue that sect of Christianity. And what I liked about it was the ritual and the community. The community, it was very tight and loving, more like a commune, really. And I was impressionable at the time. I also started yoga when I was 14. I was just naturally drawn to it, and I started going to classes. No other 14-year-old I knew was there, but for me, it was very special. It was a way to get through the stress of home and high school and all of it. And I grew up to take several yoga trainings and become a certified yoga instructor. And it's a very big part of my life when I am looking to go deeper with myself and my higher source. I like to book a yoga retreat and go, usually at a hot spring. So yoga-ing and hot springing, and, you know, that's, and in the woods, like closer to nature is always the best way, I think. And this, it's also, I think, a call to servitude. There's, you know, people who are natural servants, and I believe I'm one of them, and I aspire to be a servant to the people, to serve humanity. And spirituality encompasses all of that, I do believe. And Kevin, I do want to plant trees with you. I absolutely do.
I look forward to the time where we can do that and continue this conversation there. What a fascinating mother you must have had, who would expose you to all of those different ideologies rather than forcing one down your throat. Hey, we have a caller, Matt from Florida. Hi, Matt. What have you got to ask us?
Let's see here now. Let me get you on board here. Matt from Florida, am I here? Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, Matt.
Kevin, Guy, thank you so much for inviting me on your show again and letting me speak and talk to your great guests. Really appreciate what you guys are doing for the climate, for the climate change movement. You guys are just, you know, coming through. These folks that you got on, their kind of youth and enthusiasm that we're showing, this is a multi-generational problem. Clearly that the generation before mine and yours and our dads, you know, that generation simply didn't have a clue on climate change enough to make any changes. Our generation knew but decided not to. And the generation after us has just gotten sold an incredible bill of goods by the capitalist system that everything's going to work out if they just work hard, get a good job, and become good, you know, capitalist employees, and everything's going to be. And then we realized that was a lie, too. You're not taken care of by the system whatsoever. The system doesn't really care about you at all. And all the lies that our generation used to keep everybody employed, motivated, and cranking are now coming true in the Bernie Sanders movement. We're just sitting around going, wow, geez, is there another system? Is there another way to do this? Because this one's just not working at all. So I'm a big fan of hashtag distribute power. It's just that the entire system is massively flawed. We have a political system that's not meeting the needs of any of us. We have religious systems, and we have other social systems. And all of these systems, every single one of these operating systems that we've relied upon as human beings have failed us in climate change. That within the climate change movement, there is simply no mainstream religion that took action soon enough. There's no mainstream, including Buddhism, that sat down and said, wait a minute, our focus of attention on the development of the self is important, yes, but the focus on the development of the environment is more important. No religion said that. None of them came through. Nothing. Zero. No insurance company, no military, no government. Nobody came through and said, wait a minute. We have something that's far more important than our existing agendas, far more important than our to-do lists. We have an environmental problem that needs to be fixed. Nobody did it. No one stepped up to the pump. And I think this is where the interesting questions that Guy is sharing with you younger people, as we're seeing, you know, a universality of, I just used the best systems I knew available. I went into Taoism. I went into Buddhism. I studied science. I said, there's got to be a way to make this work better. And in the end, we missed it. We missed the climate change issue. Every system missed it. And we're now faced with these incredible consequences that are just simply not getting better. I'm not seeing any evidence of anything coming down the pipeline that indicates something's going to get better. When it gets worse, how it gets worse, all those little details, we're learning as we go here, but there's no one looking too optimistic in the future.
Thanks for that, Matt. I think what you will probably be able to discern from both of our guests is that the philosophies that they follow, and Guy and myself follow, is something along the lines of what the Buddhists will say about right action without being attached to the outcome. Guy, do you have another question for our guests?
I was wondering if Matt had a question for our guests.
Yeah, it's about this optimism issue. It's really about optimism in general. You know, is that a necessary, along with hope, is that a necessary component, you know, to be happy in general, is having an optimism? It's the idea that you need some sort of macro state of hope or optimism that's going to be dependent upon your long-term happiness. Because I'm not seeing any optimism. I'm not seeing it.
Okay. Thank you, Matt. I appreciate it. Colin, you want to take that on? Is optimism necessary in your life? Is hope necessary? Is there a difference between the two?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think for me, optimism and hope are different, but, you know, they're very similar. And I think at times, you know, if I am lacking them, it is very noticeable to me. However, I'd say there's also times where I'm very not attached. And sometimes there is not hope or optimism, but that's not, you know, it's not a two-sided coin. I'm not depressed about that. I don't feel a lack of hope or like things are going to turn out terribly. I just am kind of very accepting. And so for me, it's important at times, like when I'm trying to consider what I'm doing with the next 3 years of my life. I'm writing a bunch of grants right now and figuring out what I'm doing for work. You know, I have a lack of hope and optimism that I needed to sit down and think about, well, why is that? And, you know, what am I going to do about it? And in my case, my practice is almost always just to accept that I'm not going to necessarily do anything about it. I'm just going to feel that. And when that feeling is fully felt, I kind of just let it go, which is part of sort of a mindfulness training. And the reason I do that is because I still believe in doing, you know, as you say, right action, good work, whatever you want to call it, these things that feel meaningful to me and give my life a lot of joy and I think expand positive connections in most arenas in my life. Like that, to me, that's always worth doing, no matter kind of what the future is. So maybe I'm in a permanent state of hope or optimism. I don't know. I honestly don't think about that very often, except for these times when I feel depressed or like, you know, the weight of everything is on me. And I just kind of use that as a sign that I need to go within and think about it and, you know, sort of just check in with what I'm doing with my life and make sure it's still aligned with my internal values or what really matters to me and feels right.
That's
yeah,
great.
Go within and go to the trees, right, Colin? Go be in nature.
Yeah. You know it.
Well, I would respond to Matt's query with, I have a lot of excitement about the time that we are on the planet, because as Matt said, the systems are not working. They are rife with dysfunction, and a lot of people fall through the cracks in the way that we operate, and it's not working. And I'm hopeful and optimistic that the whole system, all of them, will come crashing down. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. And I'm not saying it's going to be easy or painless transition, but it's a necessary transition for humanity as we come closer to what we know we're facing. And I'm fine with it. And there's a lot of optimism there to say goodbye to the things that haven't worked for all these years. Hope, though, hope isn't a necessary thing. Optimism isn't a necessary thing. I think what's more useful are enthusiasm and participation. And we've touched upon participation. It's important to do what you can do for you and your people, what feels good, you know, if it's a spiritual path, going into nature, growing food, whatever it is, advocating to your friends so that they can be awake and aware. But I tell my students when I'm teaching, enthusiasm is going to get you through, and participation, that is a must.
You know, both of you mentioned action, and a great line here comes from somebody who is very influential for me. That's Edward Abbey, the so-called desert anarchist, who was a longtime friend of Colin's dad. And Colin, you were fortunate enough to meet him. My favorite line of his is, "Action is the antidote to despair." And I tend to view hope and optimism as potentially getting in the way of taking action. If we hope for a better future, that doesn't mean we're going to do anything. In fact, it might preclude taking action if we just assume the future is going to be better. You both obviously are people of action. You have taken the kinds of steps that I would have found terrifying when I was your age. So my question for you is, how? Why? How did you become so action-oriented? Cachet, we'll start with you, because I'm pretty sure I know the answer from Colin.
All right. Well, so I knew at an early age that I wanted to serve at a large scale, and that I had natural leadership ability, and I wanted to grow into that at whatever level that would reach, which, of course, you know, my aspiration at this point is to become governor of Alaska when Alaska is ready for a governor like me. So way out of the mainstream. But I learned at a very young age, based on the communication modeling of my parents, who are wonderful people, but I knew early on that if I wanted to learn how to communicate, I would need to study it actually professionally. And that determined the course of my university career, which was to study human communication, interpersonal, intercultural emphasis. And I have a passion for French, and so I minored in that. And here at my graduate level, I'm studying professional communication here again because I value communication so highly. And what I'm missing in this public university institution is this level of consciousness going deeper with people that the realm of tantra and yoga and spirituality can offer that the mainstream doesn't, which is just how to clearly connect with the heart and communicate consciously and lovingly with a mutual goal of understanding, deep listening, authentic being. And these are things that I'm practicing and inspiring others to practice, you know, and like I mentioned, like having clear boundaries and moving forward in your life. If you feel a full body yes, don't do something if you have any resistance to it, right? Do it if it feels like every cell in your body wants to move in that direction. If there's resistance in your body and if you're having a no, don't move forward in that direction, right? So these are very interesting times. I'm excited to be here and to continue to be an activist and to continue to activate myself and raise my awareness and my consciousness as I aspire to help others as they raise their own.
That's great. And Mr. Peacock, how do you feel? Optimism, hope, action, how do they fit in? Clearly, you've taken actions. You've moved around the country multiple times. You've lived in the woods. You've lived in the big city. You're a chef. Comment, please.
Yeah. Well, you know, I couldn't help but mention without the other half of that Edward Abbey quote is, "Sentiment without action is the ruin of the soul." And that's always been a driver for me. You know, I don't know if I've ever had a choice. about taking action, because to not take action really was soul-crushing for me. I think the times in life where I've been, you know, feeling like I couldn't act on my desires or things I felt were important, or, you know, be the kind of person I want to be, those are the times when I've been my lowest. And so all of my life, I think I've been striving to put myself in a position and be in the kind of mental, physical, emotional, spiritual shape where I can take actions that I think are important. You know, for example, you know, helping small food businesses get started here in Juneau, or helping a sustainable development business get started in Peru when I knew a friend that lived there and wanted to do this and knew he could help a lot of, you know, essentially rural farmers preserve crops that are some of the most biodiverse crops in the world that are most adapted to climate change. It was like just a call to action. And to not honor that, you know, I don't even know if I can imagine. And I'm not sure this is something that happened to me. I mean, I was very blessed to grow up with a tribe of activists, you know, Terry Tempest Williams and Edward Abbey and my father and so many others, just, you know, saturating my life with their fire and their wisdom. So maybe it just, you know, maybe I caught that from them. I don't know. But, you know, I just don't know if I've ever felt like I could not take action and not do things without feeling good about who I am, or right about what I'm doing. And yeah, I don't know. I think Cache really has a really good perspective on things, where she also feels like she needs to be a servant, or is a servant of humankind. And I think that was a feeling I've always had, and I don't think anybody gave that to me. I mean, that's just been there. To serve others, this has been an honor, and to help others is a joy. So that also pushes me forward so much of the time, because I know I'm in a position of privilege where I can help others. So I'm trying to maximize on that and do the best I can, and that feels good. That feels really right.
Well, can I add to that?
Of course.
The things that we do that feel good and we're following our hearts bring us to encounter other like-minded individuals. And so I wouldn't have come to know Colin if I hadn't discovered Guy McPherson and invited him to Alaska, which was then what connected me with my new friend Colin, who together we might change the course of Alaska's future. You know what I mean? And so it feels good to be a servant. It feels good to be humble and move forward following the heart, because the universe brings these incredible people into your reality that you have lifelong friendships with thereafter. It's a beautiful thing.
Truly.
That's great. I'm going to ratchet up the urgency here. You're both clearly people of enormous integrity. You have taken radical actions. You have lived as if your time was short. So what if you had 6 months left? What if you were each given a terminal diagnosis, you have 6 months to live? Would you do anything differently? Would you keep it the same? Would you pursue the same general path, but sneak in a trip somewhere? And if so, where? Cache, why don't you hit us first?
Yeah. Well, I have a favorites list, and it includes world travel, backpacking, hiking into the wilderness, visiting hot springs, visiting beloved friends, of which I am blessed with many, many dear close friends around the globe, and taking these trips and doing yoga, going to meditation retreats. So you know what I would do? I would do all the things that I'm already doing. I would just do more of them in that short term. And that's exactly why I am living my life this way. You know, I'm not attached to the outcome of my university situation, because in the next year or two, it might totally change without, you know, completely out of my control. But I would ramp it up, and I would take more trips and do more hikes into wilderness, and I would find more hot springs. And I would just put it on my credit card and say, whatever.
Thank you, Colin.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's already how I'm living currently. I would probably talk to people a bit more, people in my life that I'm not in touch with, and try to see them. But I feel like that fire is already there, and I'm trying to balance that with the idea that we don't know how much longer we have to live. but still trying to make those actions and decisions and spend my time as if it's only 6 months and to really appreciate what I have. You know, gratitude is also a central practice in my life. And if every day I'm sort of not expecting for the next day to come around and I can just be grateful for what I'm doing, what I have, what I'm seeing, it just makes life so much richer and so much more enjoyable. So I'm not sure I would really change that much. I mean, maybe I'd try to do a few bigger trips or things, accelerate it, as Cachet says, but I feel like I'm already trying to walk that line.
I would, based on my observations anyway, I would say that both of you are walking that line. Both of you are trying to live with urgency given the time we have left, no matter how much time we have left. And of course, we can't know that, certainly not at the level of the individual. So what if it was shorter? What if you had time to make a phone call? What if you had 10, 15, 20 minutes? Then what? Would you turn to your spiritual practice more than you do right now? Would you make the last phone call to somebody you love? If I'm making you uncomfortable pressing on this issue, there's no obligation to respond. But Cachet, what do you think?
No discomfort at all. I am very comfortable with death. And so if I were told, hey, you've got a few minutes, it would maybe be a shock. But if it was the reality, I would likely get on the phone and call a few choice people, definitely the mom and the dad and the best friends, and just say goodbye. I would like to, if I could choose consciously how that would go, I would likely be sitting in meditation on the way out or surrounded by loved ones, holding hands.
Mm. Excellent. Colin?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I would do anything that different from Cachet, honestly. I'm not sure I'd be called to call anyone, actually. I think if I only have 10, 15, 20 minutes, it might just be time to just, I don't know, take it in. I feel like that is a momentous time. It is an incredible time. I guess I'd be really excited. it's a thing I think about a lot. I think a lot about death and a lot about what it means to move beyond this life. So yeah, I guess I'd be pretty excited and really ready to see what happens next. Yeah. Yeah. I'd probably have to walk. I'd probably have so much energy.
You both sound like you're fans of George Carlin, although you're young enough you might not fully know who that is. He was a huge fan of catastrophe. He was always looking for chaos to come and really eagerly anticipating that chaos. And it sounds like you're both of the same mold.
Can't help it. I mean, it's what's coming.
Yeah.
Well, the excited. Last waltz one way or the other. Hey, we're coming to the end of the show. I'd like to thank both of our contributors and our listeners today, as well as Afrazen for our theme music. You can catch NBL on PRN the first Tuesday afternoon of the month at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 8 a.m. Wednesday here on Rakino Island. Our next episode is live on the 4th of June 2019. If you missed the broadcast, you can find the shows and the archives at prn.fm, on Podbeam and at Stitcher. Feel free to rate us on iTunes. Also, follow Nature Bats Last, Guy's blog, at GuyMcPherson.com for further updates, interviews, and speaking tours. And you can keep up on with my work at KevinHester.live. Until next time, remember the dominant culture has been clever, but in the end,
Nature Bats Last.
Gonna get you.